Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 109, TotalCon 2014. So I am recording this the Monday right after TotalCon. TotalCon ended on February 23rd, 2014. For those of you who are longtime listeners, you know that every year for the past few years, I've been going to this gaming convention in Mansfield, Massachusetts. It happens during the end of school vacation week here in Mass. They get a lot of people who come to this thing. It's primarily a tabletop gaming convention with a focus on board games and on role-playing games. But I love to go because there's all sorts of really fun and cool things that happen there. For this episode, I kind of just want to walk you through all the things that I had done while at the con. Because you could get just general information about the convention by going to the con's website or by going to another podcast and listening to their experience, like the Dice Tower was there, or Not Just Another Gaming podcast was also there, and they can give you their takes on it. But I really want you to feel like you are walking in my shoes. Before I go any further, I just want to let you know that, of course, you will be able to get the show notes for this episode right here, episode 109, by heading to wargamingforums.com/WR109. That's going to give you all the stuff we talk about here. It'll have links to things like our Facebook page where there's all sorts of photos from the con and just all that kind of stuff. Plus, you can also use our show notes as a way to get in touch with us, to leave us comments and email us and all that kind of stuff. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. The con actually starts, oddly enough, on the Thursday of the week, and they have a lot of pre-con gaming that happens on the Wednesday. I came on Friday, February 21st. I did an episode 108.5, that I released just before this one, where I talk about what my schedule was going to be for the con in case you were going and you wanted to meet up with me or you're just kind of interested in what I was planning to do. As is always the case, my schedule and what I actually did at the con are different. There really should be no surprises with that, but that's just kind of how it went. So I had to get there for Friday for 1 o'clock because I had this game I was going to go to. And by the time I got to the con, I was able to get in and get pre-regged and get my tickets and everything and get all set up. And I was early, so I was able to kind of just walk around a little bit at the con. One of the cool things is that a lot of the vendors at the con are the same from year to year because they love going to TotalCon so much that they actually pre-book their space before that year's convention ends. So for example, TotalCon 2014, before like Friday, before Saturday of the con was even over, the vendors had gotten in touch with the convention people and said, hey, we want to come back for TotalCon 2015 and already booked it. So you get an idea of who's going to be there every year, which is great because they have really fantastic vendors. But every now and again, there is a new vendor who comes along. And for TotalCon 2013, there was one new vendor that I happened to spot, Eclectic Eccentricities. They were in the rear of the vendor room, and they're a vendor that has gaming-themed jewelry. What I particularly noticed was that they made bracelets that had dice on them, D4s, D6s, D10s, things like that. They looked really, really nice, and I think they would be a good gift for the gamer in your life. We'll have a link to their Facebook page on our show notes. But I just wanted to give a shout out to them because they were just really interesting. A lot of the vendors there are selling games because, I mean, it is a gaming convention, but they're selling board games, card games, dice, things like that. There is a vendor that sells a lot of t-shirts. It's fantastic, but you don't see a lot of things like this. And there's more and more women who go to these kind of conventions, and it's really important to make sure that there is stuff for them to be interested in. And not every woman is interested in jewelry and things like that, but enough of them are that something like this makes sense. And even if they're not able to go to the convention, maybe there's a gamer who knows of a woman in his or her life who would be interested in something like this. so it makes a nice present for you to pick up and then give to someone at a later time. I also need to give a shout out to one of my favorite vendors. I'm only ever able to see them when I go to TotalCon, but I look forward to it all year long. Crossroad Games, they're based in Standish, Maine. They are really just a bunch of superstars. Brendan and Jeremy do a fantastic job of running their booth and really figuring out what the customer needs. I've gotten to know them over the past few years and really enjoy spending time with them. If you listened to episode 107 of this show, you know that I had talked a little bit about difficulty that I have getting my wife to play games because she's not a gamer. On episode 107, Aaron Boston talked about the successes that he has had with his wife, and he gave tips and advice for how people like you and me can get our significant others into gaming. Someone else who could have been on that show is Jeremy from Crossroad Games. When I was at their booth, I was like, Jeremy, you know, my wife's not a gamer, but I'm kind of hoping that maybe I can find something that she might be interested in. I'm always trying to be on the lookout for something that we can do. And I explained how she loves apples to apples, for example. I don't know how familiar all of you are with it. Apples and Apples is a great game, but really for you to have the maximum amount of fun playing apples to apples, you need a large group of people. It's a party game, right? You need lots of people. How often are you going to get a lot of people together and a lot of people who are going to want to play apples to apples? Not a lot, right? So I want to try to find something that my wife and I can play together. And Jeremy suggested two games, and I will go into more depth in those games probably in a later episode of Wargaming Recon to kind of talk about successes or failures that I'm having with this endeavor. But I just want to mention that the first one he suggested is Love Letter by AEG, and the second one is called Hanabi. It's by R&R Games, and I think that one is actually the game that my wife is probably going to like the best if she ends up liking either one of them. So if you're ever at TotalCon or ever up in Maine, they're not too far from Portland, check out Crossroad Games. They are fantastic. So by the time I was done perusing the vendor room and just doing a quick once around of the con, it was time for me to go to my game. So I was all excited and ready because the game I was playing in was Gundam Operation Hammerstrike. It's a Mechton Zero event run by industry guest Jay Libby. You might recognize the name because Jay Libby, who is co-owner of Dilly Green Bean Games, was a guest here on Wargaming Recon for episodes 101 and 108. The description for the game is such. The Zeons have taken control of the Federation mining facility on Earth, known as Augur's Mine. Can the Zeons hold out as the Federation forces counterattack? Mechton Zero is a new incarnation of Mechton by Mike Pondsmith and R. Talsorian Games. This was successfully kickstarted, of course, on Kickstarter. So it turned out that I was the only person who signed up for this game, which was a huge surprise to Jay because Jay ran this at SnowCon. He said when he ran it at SnowCon this year, 2014, there was a ton of people playing in it. Now, I understand that most of you may not be interested or knowledgeable about anime or Gundam. Really, I am new to the Gundam world. Gundam is hugely popular in Japan. It's one of the biggest, most valuable franchises in Japan when you look at this kind of material. So much so that they have life-size Gundam statues in Tokyo. These statues, one thing you have to realize really is Gundam is a gigantic robot kind of thing. Big, huge, skyscraper-tall robots that have people in them piloting the robots and engaging in battle. So the game, Mechton Zero, is actually a role-playing game. But Jay has this large collection of, I believe it's 1/400th scale Gundam models for the tactical battle game that exists. So Jay was using his models, his 1/400th scale Gundam models, which stood about an inch or a couple inches tall on the table, and he was using them to run this as a minis game, which really is what drew me into it. I'm curious about role-playing games, and I'm, you know, kind of interested in them. Probably won't play in RPGs. It turns out it's not really my thing. If it was something that you guys wanted to hear more about, I would happily do my homework on it, hit the street, as it were, and find out what's going on and get the content for you, but not really my thing, so to speak. So he was running the game, and since I was the only one, surprise, surprise, who had signed up for it, he was going to play against me. And he really wanted to run it because if he was playing against me, he has extensive, really extensive knowledge on Gundam and all of this. So he didn't want it to be unfair to me because I'm a noob, right? Luckily, a couple of other industry guests happened to walk by. James, Dreg, Carpio, and Mary Lindholm popped by, and they ended up being convinced to join in. They're both friends of Jay. So we played the game, and they were the Zeons, and I played as a Federation, and they kicked my butt. We moved the models around, rolled some dice. They won, but the important thing is we all had fun. It was just a blast hanging out with them, playing the game, moving the stuff around, seeing how it was. The general way that the game goes is this. You have a group of giant robots. Each robot has a stat card. It shows its weapons, the name of the pilot, the maximum movement, damage for weapons, range for weapons, all those usual sort of things. Combat is really simple. If you're in range for your weapon, you roll the necessary dice. The GM checks to see if your target has shields. If they do, you deduct your damage from the shield strength. Eventually, you'll punch through the shields, and then your damage will go through to the hull. If they have no shields, your damage goes potentially into the hull. The GM uses a chart to determine where on the enemy robot your damage goes. It's possible that maybe your damage ends up in the head of the robot, and you kill the pilot, or maybe you take off a leg or an arm, or they lose the ability to use a certain weapon. It's actually really interesting, and it sounds complicated, but it's not. I really did enjoy the game. It was a lot of fun, but I have some suggestions, really. A suggestion, I guess, more, that would be helpful, I think, for running something like this at a convention. We used dice to keep track of the damage on each model. I think instead of using dice, it probably would have been more helpful to have like a chart or something that you can just cross off the boxes to show damage. A lot of people's eyes glaze over when there's a chart, so maybe that's why Jay didn't do it. I'm not sure. I haven't asked him, and I will, but I didn't ask him about it. But it was hard to keep track of, wait, okay, so I'm using this dice to keep track of damage, but do I also have to, like, is that the right side of dice, or do I need another side of dice to keep track of damage, and, like, where should I put it, and what kind of damages am I keeping track of? It would just be a whole lot easier to have that chart and cross off. Okay, that's one shield point. This is two shield points. This is a hull point. Oh, wait, there goes the arm. Oh, you know, whatever. And that way, anyone could easily see, oh, look, that's blocked out. That's crossed off or whatever. We also used a bunch of different types of dice, D10s, D6s, and so forth. For a role-playing game, I know that's par for the course. So, like old-school games like BattleTech with the old-school models and everything, par for the course, right? But for something like this, it was kind of confusing to remember, okay, which side of dice do I need for this, and which side of dice do I need for that? So you could get away with this, but maybe have a sheet for someone to look at and say, okay, this is what you would use for this, this is what you use for that. Just be a little easier. And then I was a little confused, and I think Mary was also a little confused. When looking on the stat cards for the robots, when you looked at the weapons to determine how much damage you would inflict, they would say things like 10k, 6k. I thought that meant like 1,000, 6,000 model points of damage, 10,000 points of damage. In my experience, if you see K like that as an abbreviation, it's a abbreviation for 1,000 as a quantity of units, when actually it meant like kits or something like that. It was a separate unit of measurement, but it wasn't 1,000. So I was like, oh my, look, this does 10,000 points of damage. So like I rolled and I was like, oh, that does 6,000 points of damage. And Jay's like, it does what? And he's like, oh wait, you know, you mean K's. It does 6K. Oh, okay, okay. So just getting used to the lingo was easier after that was explained. Maybe for people who are used to Gundam and this kind of stuff, it's par for the course. They know, oh, it's K, it's not thousands. But for someone who's new like me, and maybe that's the kind of person you're going to get at a convention, people like me who were new to it, knowing that it was thousands really would have helped out. Or rather, knowing that it was not thousands would really have helped out. But like I said, all in all, game was a lot of fun. I had a blast. It was a good way, definitely a good way, to start off the convention. It turns out there's some prize support for it, so when I get that, I will happily tell all you guys and girls what kind of prize support I got. At 5 o'clock of the convention on Friday, I was in for a special treat. They had a special event. It was Matthew Ebel Gamer Music. So the name Matthew Ebel may not be familiar to some of you guys and girls, but his music should be. And the reason for that is he has a song called Downtown. We use a portion of that song as our theme song. I have this history with him because he had his music up on this website called the PodSafe Music Network, which was basically a website where podcasters like me could go and could get music that they could legally use and not be afraid about. The artist wanted us to use it. So I kind of came across him that way, and ever since then fell in love with his music and used it and listened to it and love it. For his event, I should really describe his kind of music for all of you as piano geek rock. He uses an electric keyboard to accompany his voice. He has an amazing voice. And his songs cover all sorts of geeky kind of things. Things like ninjas and Star Trek and Firefly, the TV show by Whedon, and Indiana Jones, and just like all that kind of stuff. It's very funny, very interesting. It's whimsical. But he also is profound. His lyrics are well crafted. The audience was intimate. There was probably maybe 20, 30 people total, but people kind of came and went. It was a small group, and I stumbled across it because I forgot that it was happening, especially at that time. So I went in and sat, and I was enjoying it, and I was requesting songs, and I think I threw him for some loops because some of the songs I was requesting were some of his earlier titles. Downtown happens to be an earlier one, but really, seeing him in person is so much better than listening to his music as a recording. He is fantastic, just beyond a doubt amazing. And he goes to all sorts of cons all over the place. A lot of them are kind of general geekdom, fandom sort of cons. So maybe not something necessarily that would appeal to a lot of us. But it's highly interesting. And for me, it was one of my con highlights. I managed to get a photo with him, which will be put up on our Facebook page at a later date. It was a lot of fun to be in the audience and feel the vibe and just see him perform. Definitely a highlight for me for the con. I didn't really expect to be playing in any other games on Friday, but I kind of stumbled onto a game. Funny story with it, but I kind of stumbled onto a game by Dan Eustace. I talked about it a little bit, the first Naval Battle of Guadalcanal using the War at Sea rules, that collectible minis game by Wizards of the Coast, taking place at 7 o'clock. So I had thought the GM social was at 8 o'clock this year. Don't know why I thought it, but for some reason I did. It was at 11 in 2013, and I should have known, but for whatever reason, I was like, it's at 8 o'clock, so that means I can't play in Dan's game. And I would have signed up because I love playing in Dan's events. When I realized that the GM social was at 11 and not 8, I was like, oh, I have some time. So I was kind of walking around, seeing what's going on, saying hi to people and everything. And I happened to walk past Dan's table, and I was like, hey, how's it going? And he asked if I wouldn't mind just kind of sitting in. And I joined the forces of the Imperial Japanese Navy. He had two people playing the side of the Americans, but one guy on the side of the Japanese. I haven't played War at Sea for quite a few years, but I am definitely a big fan of it, and I loved playing it way back in the day. So I was eager to get into this because, like I said, Dan just runs really amazing events, and if I had known beforehand that the GM Social was actually at 11 instead of the 8 o'clock, which I mistakenly thought it was, I totally would have signed up for it. Something you should know about Dan's events. His games of War at Sea are highly customized. It's not like what you're going to find when you buy the core game and just open it and start playing with your buddies. He takes the game, which is definitely a beer and pretzel game, and he adds a lot of depth. He turns it into a more exciting historical game. For example, in his event on Friday, we had to take into account things like heading of ships. We could change heading. We had torpedoes that we would launch, and normally in the game you launch them and they hit the same turn. Not necessarily realistic. So on his, they could potentially hit on the next turn after you launch them. So he does things like that to add a little more interest to the game. It's a lot of fun to do it, and he is definitely one of the few GMs that could run almost anything, and I'll play in it. By the end of the game, it turned out that the Imperial Japanese Navy had won. It was close, though. I think it was something like 68 points to 61, and you needed 60 points to win. But Dan said, oh, whoever has the most really at the end of it is going to end up being the one who wins. A lot of fun. Eager to play Wartsy again. And I'm going to have to start digging my stuff out and find out some of the customizations that Dan had done and see what I can do to maybe adapt some of those for play here at Wargaming Recon Central. After playing in the game, it was time to get myself together for the GM social. So you may have noticed that although my con schedule, which I mentioned in episode 108 and a half, that I mentioned having dinner at 5, but you may have noticed that so far I have not mentioned eating any meals while at TotalCon. So there was this kind of shift in things. It wasn't expected, but I don't know, like the time-space continuum went wonky or whatever, and it resulted in my dinner mates being unable to have dinner with me because events that they were participating in and belonging to, the time kind of shifted on them, so things just didn't work out. So I was like, oh, I'm so hungry. By the time I realized that I was going to be able to get into dinner and I participated in the first naval battle of Guadalcanal, it was after the time that the restaurant closed. I was like, oh, well, I guess, I don't know, maybe I'll eat potato chips or something in my room for dinner. But thankfully, TotalCon saved the day and they put dinner in my tummy. Every year, to show their appreciation to the GMs for making TotalCon such a success, they host what they call a GM social. It happens on the Friday evening of the con, and they have a spread of food. They encourage all GMs to come in to the room where they have it, hang out, get a bite to eat, chat, meet one another, network. That's a term you're going to hear me use a lot in this episode, and just kind of chill and relax and chance for them to say thank you. So on Fridays, I eat what you could call a pescatarian diet. It's a vegetarian, but I'll eat seafood too. And it's only on Fridays. Won't really go into why I do that. It's just, it's one day a week thing that I do on Fridays. So I wasn't really sure what I would be able to eat at the GM social because, I mean, gamers as a rule don't necessarily eat healthy, so to speak. We're not known for that. But I was like, you know, we'll see what it is and see what I can kind of figure out. And lo and behold, I was saved because there was all sorts of delicious stuff that had like bacon on it and meat or whatever. It looked really, really good. And I wanted it, trust me, but I could not have it. So I kept on opening the trays of food and they had the hot food, you know, with the burners underneath. And I came to two vegetarian options that just looked really good and they were tasty beyond belief. One was mozzarella sticks, they really, really good mozzarella sticks, and the other was stuffed mushrooms. They were provided courtesy of Modern Myths, which is a vendor at TotalCon. So I have to give a huge shout out and thank you to Modern Myths. I guess a few years back, they started doing this because they had approached the people at TotalCon and asked if the con organizers minded if they provided some vegetarian food because I guess they have a lot of vegetarian employees. So they wanted to make sure that they could have things that their employees could eat. Makes perfect sense. And then it ballooned out so that for the GM social that they help co-sponsor it by providing vegetarian options. Just really appreciative of that. And the food was really good. For many people who go to a gaming convention, the con is a chance to play in just a lot of fun games. You put in as many games as you can. So that way you're just gaming nonstop. For me, a con is more of a working vacation, I guess you could say. At TotalCon, I'm there as official press. I'm there to cover the con for Wargaming Recon. That's my purpose. Obviously, I want to have fun. Obviously, I want to relax and do some cool stuff and try something different. But the main reason I'm there is so that I can get content for you guys. And part of that entails me networking with whomever so that I can create that new content. At the GM social, I had the pleasure of meeting Stefan Pokorny. Stefan, and I'm not sure if people are aware of his name, but I'm sure when I talk about him, you might have seen some of his stuff. But he is the founder of Dwarven Forge. Dwarven Forge makes what I'm going to call breathtaking terrain for role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons. You can fully create your underworld adventure in a dungeon or in a mountain or wherever, caverns and so forth, with their 3D terrain. It's modular. You can lay it out however you want. They have a new set of products, which they successfully kickstarted, called Dungeon Tiles. They claim, and I have no reason to doubt them, but they claim that they're basically indestructible. The way Stefan explained it to me is that you could take them and just throw them in a bag, travel to wherever your game is, dump them out on a table, play your game, and shove them back into your bag, and they're not going to break, they're not going to chip, the paint's not going to fall off, that you're good to go, and they will probably outlast all of us. If you don't believe me, there's a YouTube video for it. I'll get the link, put it in the show notes, so that way you can see it. Like, they take a hammer to these things, and they start beating the crap out of them. They throw them downstairs, they put them in one of those big cement mixers, and just have them rolling around in there. They come out, and they're fine. Absolutely incredible. Now you're thinking, okay, maybe we're not really into D&D, and you're talking about role-playing games a lot, so I don't know how interested I am in any of this stuff. Okay, the reason why they might be of interest to historical gamers like you and me is that they also happen to have some beautiful terrain that would be perfect for a medieval skirmish game. You can recreate like a tavern or a house and then play your skirmish game inside this particular space. Their terrain for the medieval setting is not part of their dungeon tile, so it's not virtually indestructible. It's their older stuff. It comes pre-painted. It's pretty affordable, actually, and it looks great, so you could buy as much as you need, and like all their other stuff, it's modular. It's compatible, actually, with the dungeon tiles, and you can just piece it together however you want, and then you could have whatever kind of skirmish gaming you want to do inside. Looks awesome. Stefan is a really nice guy, very creative, very talented, and for those of you who are more in tune with the role-playing game world, you know he's a huge name in it. And for those of you like me who are a little less in tune in it, you know that he makes cool stuff, maybe? Or if you don't, I'm telling you now, he makes really cool stuff. But what I'm really excited about, besides the fact that his stuff is really cool, and it's beautiful, is that once he and I work out our schedules, you can expect to hear Stefan on a future episode of Wargaming Recon as a featured guest. I'm really excited for you to learn more about his products and, of course, to hear his thoughts on gaming. So after the GM social, I had a little bit of midnight networking. So behind some steel doors in a bunker many, many levels below the convention, I happened to network with some industry guests, some GMs, and con staff. So this was my first experience to be in an intimate setting with two big names in the gaming world. And they're like huge when it comes to role-playing games, but they still have an impact on all sorts of tabletop gaming and on wargaming in general. I'm talking about Frank Mentzer and Tim Kask. These two individuals worked at TSR. They worked with Gary Gygax. Tim Kask was the first full-time employee at TSR. He was the editor of Dragon Magazine, and Frank Mentzer was incredibly close with Gary. I'm presuming I don't need to explain who Gary Gygax is for everyone. Even if you're not into role-playing games, he created a game before D&D called Chainmail, which was a historical war game. Look up Chainmail on Wikipedia. Look up Gary Gygax on Wikipedia. You can find both Frank and Tim on Wikipedia. You can find out all about them on there and everywhere else. So at this midnight networking event, there was like 10 of us. We just kind of found spots to sit wherever. And we listened to Frank and Tim sharing some history of their earlier days in gaming. Fantastic. I am not a big RPG D&D fanboy by any means of the imagination. I think it's cool. I think it's amazing. I love what they've done with the stuff. But I'm not really as knowledgeable about it. My interests lie more with the miniatures gaming, more with wargaming and historical gaming, that kind of stuff. I was bowled over by these two men. They are simply amazing. They really are best of the best. Some of the smartest people, very interesting, gifted storytellers. They have it all. And what's really cool about them is you could go to just about any convention, right? And there's going to be some sort of big name for that audience. But is the big name going to be approachable? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. These two men are happy to take some time to talk with you. They're happy to sign stuff. They're very friendly, very gregarious. So it's fantastic to be able to be in an intimate setting like that and to have that experience. While there, I also got to spend quite a bit of time with Greg Belovic. He is of Battlegroup Boston. For gamers in the New England area, you're most likely to know Battlegroup Boston because they put on the Havoc Convention, which is the longest running historical war games convention in New England. So he was just a joy to chat with because he was able to remind me of the rich history that wargaming has. And he is a grognard in the truest sense of the word. He runs amazing games. He's a GM. Just a really nice and friendly guy. I'm hoping, beyond hope, that I will someday be able to get him to come on the show, because I think he has a lot to say. A lot that you guys would be very interested in. Let me just tell you, as much fun as it is to network, especially at midnight, it is tiring. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong, a lot of fun, but a lot of work. And, you know, my Saturday, it was rough in the morning. So my day kind of began because my alarm went off and I was like, no, it can't be this early. It's not really 9, right? Because I just fell asleep. Well, no, looking at the clock, yeah, I got my 5 hours of sleep. That was rough, but it's okay because I had a job to do, so I got ready, and I was running behind because I only had 5 hours of sleep. So I had a pass on breakfast, unless you're going to count a handful of potato chips and a Diet Cola that I had. Otherwise, there's no go on that, and I had to get ready for a 10 o'clock panel that I was attending. It's called Kids and Gamers. My buddy Ben Gerber, owner of Troll in the Corner, he was sitting on the panel, and I was like, oh, I need to get there because I'm really interested in getting people into gaming. And in particular, you know, our significant others, but also kids, really very interested in how we can get that younger generation into wargaming, into any gaming, really, tabletop gaming in particular, but any sort of wargaming. And I knew that this panel was going to talk about gaming in general, focus on board games most likely, but that's a good entryway to kind of funnel them into things and see how stuff goes. So I was really interested to go to this panel and see what's going to happen. One of the guys who's going to be helping all of us out with the raid on Pitt's Landing, his name is Adam. I've mentioned him on the show before. He arrived a lot earlier than I was expected. We kind of all said, oh, you know, our event's at 1. We'll meet at 12:30 and get together and do stuff then and get everything ready and go. So I wasn't really expecting anyone to come earlier in the day. But, I mean, it makes perfect sense. He lives on the North Shore of Massachusetts, and so this is all the way down on the South Shore. If you're going to travel that far, you want to make a day of it, right? You want to go and see stuff. So he had come wicked early in the morning. He was there like 9-ish or so, I think. And I helped him to get signed in and everything because he's having a little bit of difficulty with that sort of stuff. So I was just helping him to get settled and say, here's a con. Go have fun. I'm going nonstop. I have stuff to do. I'll see you at 12:30. And little did I know, after I got things going from and stuff, I was running late for the panel. Thankfully, I wasn't sitting on the panel because that would have been awkward. I just had to be in the auditorium. So when I raced into the auditorium, I was like, wait a sec. How come it's empty? This is weird. Well, it turns out this panel started at 11. They had another panel that started at 10, and it was starting a little bit late. So instead of using my newfound free time to go and try to find something to eat, and actually breakfast ended at 10 anyway, but for me to find, I don't know, like a sandwich or something, I was like, well, I'm down on the con floor. I can wait to eat. I'll have lunch, right? So let me go and walk around and see what's happening today. And I walked into the mini section and came across one of my favorite game masters. Mike Payne was setting up his very first game of the day. His game actually was starting at 1 o'clock. Hanghai Raiders, I believe it's what it's called. Fantastic Pulp Fiction game. He uses like 12 or 14 feet of table. So he has a lot of stuff that he brings with him to set up in beautiful terrain. Most of it's scratch built, including ships and stuff. Gorgeous. And he is just a lot of fun. So I enjoyed being able to kind of chat with him and see what was going on. He could run games that normally I wouldn't play. Games like Talisman or Access and Allies, because they take so long that my eyes gloss over and I start yawning like, what else is going on? He could run those and he would captivate me, and I'd just be there for the whole like 6 or 8 hours playing one of those games. Without a doubt, he really is one of the best GMs that I have ever come across. If you see his name listed as a GM for any convention or game day that you happen to be attending, play. I know he goes to Five Councils. I think he does OGC sometimes. He might do Carnage. He does game days at the Hobby Bunker in Malden, Massachusetts. He goes to Havoc out in Shrewsbury, Mass. And I believe he also runs stuff up at Huzzah in Maine. You're anywhere in New England, chances are you're going to come across him at some sort of game day or convention. It doesn't matter what he's playing. Even if you think you're not going to be interested in it, Sign up, playing it. You're going to have fun. Trust me on this. You can't go wrong with his stuff. So I had a blast just kind of chatting with him and seeing what was going on. And then I saddled back into the auditorium because by then it was actually really, truly time for the Kids and Gamers panel to start. For panelists, they had Ben Gerber, Wayne Moulton Jr., who is from the Sages of the RPG, and Christina Crabb. She is the role-playing game co-leader for Carnage. They talked about their experiences trying to get kids into gaming. It's really interesting because Ben talked about his experience getting his two daughters into gaming, and he was unimpressed with some of the games that were out there and ways for kids to get into it. So he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make my own. So he created a sock puppet role-playing game for kids. It's called Argyle and Crew. You get a sock puppet, and you are able to give it powers and its abilities by gluing things on it or sticking stuff on it. Eyes to see, wings make it fly, you can make it breathe fire, extra legs make it move quicker, that kind of stuff. And he has very loose rules with it so that you can either just make sock puppets with your kids or you can actually play a game with them. Wayne Moulton Jr. does a lot of work gaming with kids of basically all ages. He works with elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools. So he is able to use that experience to create games that kids are going to like and to help get kids into gaming. And then Christina used her experience both as role-playing game co-leader for Carnage, but also as a mom to talk about what has worked for her to get her kids into gaming and to get other kids into gaming. Just a few notes from the panel to share with you. Wayne had said that in his experience, there was something really interesting that happened. I'm not sure about the rest of you, but a lot of us gamers, we aren't really the popular kids in school, right? Growing up, we're probably going to be the ones who are getting bullied. But sometimes, especially now that gaming is becoming more popular and it's more widespread, the kids who are the bullies want to get into the gaming. And in order to game, they need to play with the gamers, the ones who are being bullied. So gaming is helping these kids to break down these barriers and realize, you know what, you and me, we're not so different. Why are we picking on each other? Why don't we try to get along and just have fun and appreciate and understand and respect one another? That's something a lot of grown-ups have a hard time with. So to see that kids are having this kind of success is amazing. And to see that it's coming from gaming floors me. They also had some tips from all of the panelists about how to introduce your kids to board games, card games, you know, like just gaming in general. So here's our, let's see what I got. I got four tips for us. If your kids are old enough to read the components of a game, and if they're old enough to play the game that has the components without breaking those pieces and everything, then you should give the game a go. See how it is and just try it. The quote, best games for kids are the ones with the most freedom and fewest rules, according to Ben Gerber. Any game that adults can tolerate is a game that you should play with the kids, because when kids find something they like, they want to do it over and over and over and over and over again. I can't tell you how many times when my little cousins were really little, that they loved, like, say, Bob the Builder or SpongeBob, and they just wanted to watch it over and over and over and over and over and over again. I have a really little cousin right now, and she loves Daniel Tiger. He's a cartoon show on PBS, I believe it is, based on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which I grew up with. And it's Daniel Tiger all the time. So if she was playing, like, a game, say, like, she's playing Candyland, right? It'd be Candyland all the time. Now, I love Candyland. I would get tired of Candyland. So you will probably get tired of whatever game your kid wants to play. If it's something that you can tolerate, you know you're going to be doing it like 40, 50, 500 times. It won't be so bad, right? And then finally, and this comes from Wayne. He said that it's really important for us grown-ups to not get hung up on the rules. Or if kids, you know, maybe do something that they're not supposed to. Maybe they roll the dice too many times or they do something a little extra. That we should give them leeway. We shouldn't let them get away with everything, because then that's not fair. Because, like, if they go into a friend's house, right, their friend and their friend's family probably not playing the game that way, but we should give them, cut them a little slack. We're trying to get them into it. We're trying to encourage them, because think of it this way. If you're doing something new for the first time or the first few times and you try to do something and you don't really know that it's supposed to go a certain way and you're trying something and someone, like, slaps your hand and says, no, that's wrong, don't you do that. And then you're like, okay. And you're like, well, I don't want to do that. So you do something else. And it turns out that's wrong. And they're like, no, don't you do that. That's wrong too. you're going to become hesitant to do anything, and then it's going to be a bad experience, and you're not going to want to do it. And see, this works not just for kids, but this ties back into that other episode we did about getting your significant other, getting your girlfriend or whoever into gaming. You need to try to make things a positive. You need to make it a welcoming and understanding environment where they will have fun. You have to set your expectations for what works for them more than what works for you. So you have to put some things aside, such as not getting hanged up on the rules, giving them a little leeway. I thought it was really important advice, especially since the audience, of course, was mostly grown-ups, but there were quite a few dads with their daughters and dads with the kids there, and I really enjoyed seeing that, especially because of the content for the panel. So just keep those nuggets in mind the next time you're trying to game with your kids, or if you're at a convention gaming with kids. If you're playing in any of Mike Payne's events, he really encourages kids to play, and he usually says in the description that he's looking for kids to play in the games and grown-ups who will play nicely with kids, because not everyone wants to play with kids. You go to a con, you're paying your money or whatever. You want to play the game how it's supposed to be played, or you want to play with like other grown-ups, because maybe you're playing games all the time with your kids or other people's kids or whatever. So you want to do that, but he actually has his games encouraging kids to play and people who play nicely with kids. So just keep these tidbits in mind for those kind of situations. So I managed to cut out a little early from the panel because lo and behold, it was about 12:30 on the Saturday and the rest of the guys were arriving. Adrian and Court had come. So we all got together, we set up the table, and all these other gamers kept on walking by and they were pretty interested in what was going on. It ended up becoming 1 o'clock and Adrian, bless his heart, took the lead for the event. My name was on the booklet as GM for the event, but he was GM. He was the one in charge. So he waited for the players to come, and we had a nice group of people. We were sold out, as I had mentioned, and we actually had other people hoping that we weren't sold out so that they could get in. I was able to direct them to a neighboring game that I knew would be great, actually Mike Payne's game, and told them, playing that, you're going to have a blast. So we had 4 grown-ups, and we had 2 kids, a brother and sister. It's a lot of fun. Adrian explained the game to the people. He told them how the rules work, worried about setup, explained who was going to take what, explained the victory conditions. In order for the victory conditions to be a success, the French and their Indian allies had to come. They had to reach the British settlement, which was 3 buildings. Then they had to burn the British settlement to the ground, or they had to cause the British to no longer be on the table. And they could accomplish that either by killing them all or just causing them to leave, maybe forcing them to all rout, for example, or fall off the table and so forth. If the French and Indians did that, they get a decisive victory. If, however, the French and Indians burn at least 2 buildings, they would get a minor victory. The exact opposites of either of these would result in decisive or minor victories for the British, or if there's some middle ground, then it would be a draw. Adrian also introduced side plots for the game. We were using the Muskets and Tomahawks game. It includes side plots in there for officers. Each side had one like general, one commanding officer, but then we broke down their forces into smaller groups. So for example, for the French and Indians, the Indians had 4 units, and they were broken down into 2 units with an Indian chief, and then another 2 units with an Indian sub-chief. And then there was the French, which had 2 units of French regulars with the French officer who was in charge. And then the British was something similar with their composition of units. So this way, each player had an officer figure on the table that represented them. And that officer had a side plot. And there's a lot of different side plots in the rules. And I'm not going to go into all of them. And I'm not even going to cover all the ones that were used in our game, Raid on Pitt's Landing. Just some of them, and they were really interesting, but just some of them were ones such as, you have to survive the battle, or you have to kill a specific enemy officer, or maybe you have to get all the way from your table edge down 6 feet plus a table to the other table edge, all the way at the very end, right, and get off that table edge. And if you succeeded in doing any of these things, you did your side plot. So if we had a tie, we were going to take these side plots into consideration and see who completed them. The battle began with the French and Indians doing much better than in any of our playtests. The Indians had hidden movement and they crept through the forest. The French regulars came up and they were doing well. Each came on the sides. But then they ran into a little bit of trouble as they reached the edge of the settlement. So tension was building and building because no one really knew when they would get to move because it's card-based for the turn. So it's not you go, I go, or I go, you go. It is, there's a guy who is me flipping the cards in this deck, and the card will say something like, French regulars, two actions, or French Indians, one action, or British regulars, two actions, or something like that. So you don't know what order it's going to come because it's random and you shuffle it at the end of each round. So you're waiting with anticipation for it to happen, and you could get a bunch of actions in a row, or you might get one and then wait a while and get another one. So it was really cool to see the unpredictability of things, to see people thinking on their feet on how they're going to respond to what's happening on the table. And as the Indians got to that edge of the settlement, they were moving along, getting ready. And then, bam, the British Rangers unveil and start shooting at them. The British Provincials come out and attack. So it was hard because it really looked like the French and Indians were going to just take the game, that they were going to come across and swarm that first closest building, burn it to the ground, and keep on going forward and see what would happen. But right at that pivotal moment, right when tension reached that fever pitch, right at that point, the French and Allies were hit in the face with the British Provincials and with the British Regulars. The game ended with a win for the Brits. But it was a lot closer as the game progressed than it looked in the beginning, which is great because you don't want it to be where people are playing a game and from the outset they know they have no shot at winning, because that's not fun. I don't care how great the game is, how much you do to make it exciting, and how great of a GM you are. If there's no hope, people get distraught at lost causes. Just how it is. So the French were doing really well in the beginning of the game, and they were coming up, and they did better than we had ever seen. But even with that, once the British started getting their turn and started getting stuff happening, it's like 1-2 punches going left and right and put the French off balance, and the French would come back, and the British took casualties, and it was this really good back and forth. Despite that one point when the Indians, all four units of Indian troops, were close to destroying a building, and by close, I mean they were almost at the building, and they could have probably destroyed it that turn. The game ended where the British had all the buildings intact. There were no burning embers anywhere, nothing, not even a singe touched any buildings. So the British were very successful because they had the provincials who managed to hold off those Indians. And then from the flank, the British Rangers were like, pow, 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 and did enough damage to cause the Indians to break and flee. So it was really cool to see that. And at the end of the game, for any game actually at Total Con, when you are running it and there's at least four people who play, you get to award prize tickets. You get two prize tickets and you can award them to the winners. So what we had done was we decided we were going to award them to people who hopefully completed their side quests. So two members of the British side completed their side quests. One of them had to just stay alive till the end of it. He was a British ranger officer. And then I don't quite remember what the other one had. I think he had to kill an enemy officer, and he had to kill the French regular infantry officer, their commanding officer. And he completed that. So they each got one prize ticket. And that was the game. It was a blast. People had a lot of fun. I think at one point we had something like 20 or so people who were kind of just crowded around looking and seeing what was happening. People kept on stopping and looking. Later on in the day, one of the guys who's an organizer for Carnage came up to Adrian and myself and expressed his liking for what we had done and said that the table looked really good, the game looked really good. And he said that he hoped we would consider getting together and running it at Carnage. And Carnage is in November 2014. And I don't know if that'll happen or not, but it's something for us to consider. So maybe down the road you might hear me talking about us going to Carnage and running it there, and maybe not. But either way, Carnage is a cool con, and if you're in the area of Vermont, you should definitely check it out. So after the game was over, and have you noticed that I didn't get to eat breakfast or lunch on Saturday? Just saying. And Friday, dinner was kind of weird. Not doing really well for eating meals at the convention, am I? But I was starving by the time the game ended, and so I connected with one of my listeners, Patrick, and his girlfriend actually had come for the first time to Total Con, so it was a lot of fun to see a new gamer-to-be, maybe, coming to the con, because she's not a gamer at all, but she seemed like she was interested in some stuff. So we got together for dinner. Adam had to take off, which was fine, because, I mean, he had a long drive to go, and then Adrian and Court ended up rounding out the party, so it was Patrick, his girlfriend, Adrian and Court, and myself. And we just kind of hung out, had dinner, whenever you go to a convention, there's a lot happening. It doesn't matter if it's a gigantic con like Gen Con or Historicon, or if it's a smaller convention, but it's really important for you to make sure that you take some time to decompress and reflect on what happened during the day, even if it's only like halfway through the day or if it's at dinner or whatever. So that's what we did. And when you go to TotalCon, they hold it at the Holiday Inn in Mansfield. Their hotel restaurant has really good food. It's called Pike's Peak, but be warned. And the warning is that it's a good warning. The warning is that I happened to order chili for dinner. I ordered chili. I ordered a sandwich. Adrian did the same. I think he got a hamburger and I got a turkey club wrap. When they brought the chili, I was thinking like a bowl of chili, like a small cup of chili. It was a gigantic tortilla bowl with lots of chili in it. The chili was a meal in and of itself. So if you ever go, just be warned that if you get the chili, which is tasty, that it's going to be enough for a whole meal. And if you order the chili and other stuff, you're probably going to end up with too much food. I couldn't eat all the chili. I managed to eat my sandwich, but I was like, oh, this is so much food. And yeah, I didn't eat basically all day except for this, but that tells you how much food it was. After the meal, which was a lot of fun, it's cool to hang out with people, hang out with listeners, get to talk with all of you guys. After that, got to play in a game run by Mike Payne, his thrilling naval engagement. Adrian also signed up because I was like, hey, this is a cool game, and Mike runs a good game, so you should play. So he ended up coming over and playing, and we both played as Chinese warlords. We had captured 3 valuable British citizens. Our goal was to get them back into our base, this old kind of like castle looking thing. We had to keep them in our possession for the duration of the 4-hour game. If we did, yay, we win. If not, well, the British won. And the British wanted to either kill the people or take them away from us. Really, they would prefer to take them away from us, but as long as they weren't any of use to us, they would be okay with it. The game was intended for 6 people, but there were 4 of us. So to compensate for there being 4 people instead of 6, Mike allowed each of us players to have the chance to get reinforcements. These reinforcements would only come into play if our troops that we commanded, each of us, dropped down to 3 models. If they did, we rolled a d10. If we got a 0 to a 4, yay, we get 5 more troops. And then when we lose enough troops to casualties that we get down to 3 models again, we roll a d10 again, and so forth and go. So one of the things that I really like about Mike's games is that you can try to do just about anything you want. I gotta emphasize the try. If you come up with something really wacky or difficult, Mike's gonna think about it. He's gonna figure out how difficult it is, and then he's gonna have you roll. And what you roll is gonna be based on all of those things. If you're trying something really, really, really hard, you're gonna roll really, 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 really well. This is kind of, in my experience, a little bit of like role-playing game into it, because in role-playing games, you can do just about anything you want, or at least you can try to. And the GM's gonna be like, okay, let's see. You're trying to use like your index finger to break down a heavy steel door. Well, you need to roll out whatever, and because that's basically almost impossible, your roll is going to reflect that. And Mike does something similar, which I really like, so that it's kind of like an open world. A lot of people now who are into gaming, a lot of younger people in particular, are into electronic gaming. They're into playing games like, say, maybe World of Warcraft, or any video game where you can kind of do just about almost anything you want. So to have that freedom and that ability to be creative is fantastic, because you don't often get to see that in a tabletop game. Usually it's, this is how you play, these are what you can do, but you're limited in the scope of stuff. In Mike's games, sky's the limit, but some things might be hard to do. So it's really cool just to kind of be able to attempt some of that stuff. So for the first half of the game, it looked like maybe Adrian and I were doing pretty well and we're going to hold off the British. But then because of some good tactics on the part of the Brits and bad dice rolls on my end in particular, our fate was sealed. The British came, they managed to batter through into the castle, wiped out Adrian's men. Of course, he respawned, he got more reinforcements and kept on coming up and be wiped out and more would come up. But they came in, picked me off the walls. I retreated into the castle keep. This is not a medieval game, it's just the castle happened to be there left over in this part of China. So why not use it, right? Went back into the keep, British kept on coming, battered down the door, killed my warlord, killed all my guys, and just there was no way eventually that we could win. Tons and tons of fun playing in this game. It just, I could talk for 20 more minutes and just say, it's really good, Mike's amazing. After all, it's boring for me to just gush all the time, right? Playing Mike's games, this was a great game. Awesome. So after this was time for the Dilly Green Bean Games Cocktail Hour. So this is an invite-only private event. It's a secret gem of TotalCon. Of course, now that I said the name, I guess it's not really a secret anymore. Invites to this, to kind of put it into perspective for you, they're really hard to come by. They are harder, I would say, to come by than a signed original copy of Kriegspell. So it's not very likely that anyone's going to be able to get into the cocktail party. It's very restrictive in who they let in. On a previous episode of the show, I happened to mention that I was going to be attending an event at TotalCon that I couldn't talk about. This is that event. So what I can say is very limited, but I think it's of interest. So I'm going to share it to you, because I don't know about you, but when I listen to podcasts and I hear the host or co-host talk about things that are just really inside jokes or inside knowledge that doesn't apply to me, I kind of get annoyed. So if I was listening to this and I was like, oh, guy's talking about a really cool event, but he can't tell me about it, you jerk, that would be my response. But there's some cool stuff I think that I can share with you about it. The cocktail hour, it's a blast. Everyone there is incredibly nice. They're very friendly. They're very welcoming. They are some of the smartest people I've had the pleasure of meeting. The attendees at the cocktail hour, they're very well connected in the gaming world, especially with role-playing games, but just generally in the gaming world, they're very well connected. These are the movers and shakers, right? It's a nice mix of people. And as the new guy, I was very good-naturedly inducted into the group in days gone by. You could say I was probably hazed into the group, but no, because that has negative connotations. They kidded with me. They joked with me. I'm one of the gang now. But what's really of interest to you guys and girls is some other tidbits that I can share. Something was in the works for a while, but it was really fleshed out at the cocktail hour. And that is, I am going to be a guest on the MythWits video podcast. I'm going to discuss wargaming. MythWits is a really cool video podcast. It's recorded live on every Monday night. It's open to the public to watch. There's a chat room that you can chat into, and that information goes to the hosts and co-hosts, and it's shown to the guests and everything, and they just kind of talk about all of it. And then the audio of that is released after the fact as an audio podcast. So it's recorded live. You can interact. It's done on Google Plus. It's a G Plus Hangout on air kind of thing. But then when you subscribe to it, you get just the audio. And the audio is awesome. It's a lot of fun. It's comical. It's informative. It's for grown-ups only. Wargaming Recon is a family-friendly show. We're like PG-13, PG-ish. We try to keep things safe for people to listen to. You can listen to it at work. MythWits, not safe for work. Not for you to share with the little ones. If you're easily offended, don't watch it. Don't listen to MythWits. But it should be a lot of fun. It should be very interesting. It's hosted by Ben... I was about to say it's hosted by Ben Gerber, but no, it's hosted by Peter Bryant. Everyone calls him Blix. And his buddy Mike is on there as well. Mike is like a video expert, right? So Mike does all sorts of cool stuff. Very funny, really interested. Ben Gerber's been on it. Jay Libby's been on it. They have lots of people who've been on it. It's brand new. It's been out maybe a month or two, depending on the time you're listening to this, but a month or two as of TotalCon 2014. Very, very interesting. I'm looking forward to being on there. I don't know just yet when I will be on there, but as I know, I'll share that information with all of you guys. If possible, we'll make it into an episode of the podcast here. I'll say, hey, on such and such a date, you'll be able to catch me on MythWits doing, you know, whatever. Otherwise, check our social media, in particular, Facebook, wargamingforums.com/Facebook. That'll connect you to our page, and I'll have information up on there as it gets closer. And then the other thing I can say, and I hate to be all cloak and dagger about it, but I'm going to be cloak and dagger just because things are not fully ironed out yet. And in case it doesn't work, I don't want to say so-and-so is going to be on the show, and then it turns out that they're not. Or if they were to hear the name on the show, they're like, oh, well, you said this before we even agreed to stuff, and, you know, that's not really cool. That's not kosher. So what I'm going to say is that there are two people who may be appearing as guests on future episodes of Wargaming Recon. One of them happened to get married at TotalCon, and then the other person I also won't name, but I will once things are figured out. And if you happen to visit our show notes, wargamingforums.com/WR109, if you go there, you should easily be able to find a hint if you look with your eyes, and you won't be able to miss the hint. You get a good picture of who the guest may be. So this is that was TotalCon 2014. Other stuff happened, things here and there, whatever. Stuff I could talk about, stuff I could, and stuff that may or may not be of interest to you, but this was TotalCon. So for those of you who are getting your first experience of my coverage of a TotalCon, I hope you enjoyed it. It's a little different than usual. Last year, I had recorded live at the con, recorded in my hotel room, and released that. It was really, really, really long, and at times it meandered, but I think people kind of liked it, and this time I thought of doing that, and I brought my gear with me. I brought the kit and stuff so I could record in the hotel room, but I was so busy, I didn't have time to. So I'm recording this after the fact and releasing it to all of you. What you might notice, and this is something I say whenever I talk about TotalCon, so if you're a long-time listener, you're probably sick and tired of me saying it, and if you're a new listener, welcome to the show, and I'll say it for your benefit. TotalCon is primarily a convention for people who play role-playing games and board games. It's really growing its mini section, and its wargaming section. When I say wargaming, I'm talking about both minis and board games. I go to TotalCon not so much to game. If I was just going to game, the stuff that is of interest, but not like tons of stuff. If I just wanted to do tons of historical wargaming, I would go to Huzzah, or I would go to Havoc or Historicon, something like that. I go to TotalCon because of the people who run it, the people who go there, the GMs, just because of the people. The time I spend at TotalCon, believe it or not, it's actually resulted in more content for Wargaming Recon and more guests for Wargaming Recon than anything else I do. You might think, okay, Wargaming Recon, yeah, it discusses New England gaming, but it's also supposed to do historical gaming, right? So how can a general RPG board game kind of convention cost so much content for what happens here at Wargaming Recon? Because I know a lot of you tune in because you want to hear the guests, you want to hear myself, but you want to hear us talking about that historical stuff. But there's actually a lot of crossover from the non-wargaming stuff, the non-historical stuff, into the historical. If I'm talking about, or if I have a guest rather, who's talking about how to run a successful event at a convention, a successful game, not only does that apply to conventions, but it applies to all types of games, generally minis games or war games, but also applies if you're doing a game day or if you're just running a game at your house for you and your buddies or your friendly local game store for your buddies and you'd play in. If I'm talking about with someone who's going to share how to get your significant other into gaming, yeah, they might be talking about board games, but you can take that information and use it for your war gaming. If I have someone who's an indie game designer who I met at TotalCon, the information, not just because they're a role-playing game designer, but you can use that information if you want to make your own war game, or if you want to make your own adaptation of rules and all that kind of stuff. So I think there's a lot of crossover here. And I could go to, you know, something like Gen Con or Historicon. They're huge, right? And I could go, and if I did, I would just be another guy there. I'd just be another guy trying to cover the con, and I would cover like less than 1% of the con because it's so big, so much to do. And the interests that I have in sharing with you here on Wargaming Recon would align with only a small percentage of what happens there. And since those cons are even larger, that percentage is smaller and smaller and smaller. It's infinitesimal. But if I did that, not only would that stuff shrink in size, but I wouldn't be able to get the same kind of access to the industry guests that I have when I do a smaller venue like TotalCon or Huzzah or Havoc. So I am ultimately, in my opinion, and if I'm wrong, please tell me, but I feel ultimately I'm better able to give you exciting quality content by attending something like TotalCon where I can hang out with, say, someone like Frank Mentzer or Tim Kask, just for example, in a small environment like them, me, and like six other people, than going to Historicon or GenCon where it'd be like someone like them and 5,000 other people in me, right? So I'm able to get that access, and the access is key for someone like me because I'm at a con as press, hopefully, and I'm covering it for the show. So if I don't have access to the cool stuff and the information and the things that are happening and the content to share with you, I get nothing. I'm there taking up space, and that's it. I'm using up their oxygen. But by going to something like TotalCon, I'm able to get cool stuff to share with you, and I hope that you feel it's cool too. If you don't, really, please tell me. Love getting the feedback, and it's just, you know, it's my favorite part of podcasting, so it's something that I really look forward to. I also have to say, oddly enough, because it's not a historical wargaming convention, but TotalCon in general, but in TotalCon 2014 in particular, was the single best experience I've ever had at any convention, period. It was, for me, again, it's different for everyone who goes to these things, but for me, it had the perfect mix of gaming, networking, fun, work, old friends, new friends, everything. It was fantastic for me. So I hope that by listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon, you feel like you got to be there in some way, that you could walk in my shoes and see through my eyes and through my glasses, that you could experience the convention, at least partially in the way that I had. Now, if you're interested in seeing more content about the convention, a couple things that you can do. As I mentioned at the start of the show, other podcasts have covered it in the past, like covered TotalCon 2014. The Dice Tower did a live recording there, and Not Just Another Gaming Podcast, which is part of the Dice Tower Podcast Network. The guys were also there. Go on Twitter, look up at TotalCon. It's TotalCon Wargaming Convention, TotalCon Gaming Convention, rather. They have stuff there. You can find us on Twitter. It's wargamingforums.com/tweet. But really, Facebook is where we put most of our stuff. So go to wargamingforums.com/Facebook. And we have photos there, stuff that I've seen. I have more photos I got to put up. Other people who put photos up tagged us there. And you'll just be able to see all sorts of stuff. So you go to our page, you'll find stuff. And if we come across photos that other people have taken, we get their permission, we'll share them on the Facebook page. If you were at TotalCon and you took photos and you'd like us to share them on Facebook or share them, get in touch with us, get in touch with me, let me know, and I'll share the content and just promote what was happening at TotalCon, because it's a lot of fun. So don't forget the photos from the con, our Facebook page, wargamingforums.com/Facebook. Now it's time for mailbag. Now this is something I'm really excited about, that we're getting more and more mail from listeners like you, and that means we can share more and more stuff on the show. The more mail we get, the more we're going to share. And that's just how it goes. So if you want to hear something that you have written in, please get in touch with us. Send your thoughts with us, your feedback, constructive criticism we love, things that you have to say, send it to us, and maybe you'll make it onto an episode of Wargaming Recon in the mailbag part of the show. So this piece of mail is from listener Andrew, who wrote in through Facebook. And here's what he had to say. I dabbled in Games Workshop as a teenager, but was turned off from the hobby by all the cheating and arguments. Then university friends got me addicted to Full Thrust, a spaceship war game. Since then, I moved into DBA and heavily into Flames of War. I've dabbled in a lot of rules and periods, but I prefer rules that are fast yet realistic. How did you get into wargaming, is what he says to me. So Andrew, thank you very much, first of all, for writing in. You are very active on our Facebook page, and I love that. I love talking with you. I love talking with everyone. I love the activity and the interaction with everyone on the Facebook page. So thank you, first of all, again, for just contacting us and writing in and taking the time to do that. Second, I could talk for a really long time about how I got into wargaming and all that kind of stuff, and I try to dabble a little bit of it here and there into every episode. So this isn't the first time that I've been asked about that. And what this means is that I am actually going to, yes, I'm going to devote a whole episode to how I got into wargaming. I'm going to cover my origins of wargaming, and I'll talk about what's going on now and everything. So look for that. It's probably going to come in April 2014 sometime is what I'm thinking. So just kind of stay tuned and see what's coming up and wait for that and listen to it. And hopefully you guys like it, and hopefully, Andrew, it'll answer your question. So I just want to remind everyone that we have new to 2014, a couple things that we're doing. First of all, we have an episode guide. If you're curious about what's going to be the topics of upcoming podcast episodes, you want to check out our episode guide. Go to wargamingforums.com/episode guide, and that'll list all the upcoming episodes, the general theme, a topic, potential guests, and when we expect to release the episode. So, for example, I can tell you by looking at our episode guide that episode 110, Mythwits, with guest Peter Bryant, who is the host of Mythwits podcast, it will definitely release on March 17th. And then on March 30th, episode 111, HuzzaCon 2014, with guest Dean Emerson, who is from the MHWA and also an organizer of Huzzah. He's going to be talking about Huzzah and all the cool stuff happening up there at Portland, Maine. So those are just a couple of the episodes coming up. And then either episode 112 or 113 on the 14th or 28th of April will be when I talk about how I got into wargaming. That's the plan so far. So you definitely want to check out the episode guide, because it has that kind of stuff. It's been updated with new content. And then also check out our list of guests on the website because I've added the new guests on there. Don't forget, rate us on iTunes. iTunes is the number one way that people like you and me find and listen to podcasts. Oddly enough, we don't really have any ratings on iTunes, and I think that's because a lot of you may not use iTunes to listen to us. But if you do, and if you like what you happen to hear here on Wargaming Recon, please go onto iTunes, leave us a rating. You think we earn 5 stars? Great. Fantastic. You think we earn 2? You think we earn 4 or 3? Whatever. Just click on the number of stars that you think we earn, leave us that rating, and that's going to help other listeners, other wargamers and gamers like you and me, to find Wargaming Recon and take a chance and listen. And if they like what they hear, then they'll continue to listen, maybe tell their friends about Wargaming Recon, and we can grow our community of people who listen to Wargaming Recon. And really, if you just got to have our content all the time, subscribe to us in iTunes. I know that you can listen to us streaming through our website, wargamingrecon.com, or on trollitc.com, or you can download the episodes that way or through Wargame Vault. All great ways are, we're on Stitcher Radio too, of course. You can get access to us any of those ways. But if you want to make sure that you have our content right when it releases, subscribe on iTunes, listen to the episodes, and that way you'll continually get all our new content through iTunes. It makes it really, really easy for all of you to get the stuff that way. And that's just how it goes. So I'm going to wind down the show and thank you all very much for listening to this episode 109 with our coverage of TotalCon 2014. Don't forget, go to the show notes, wargamingforums.com/WR109. That has links to everything. Links to the episode guide, links to the iTunes, links to our Facebook page. It tells you how to get in touch with us. If you would love to get in touch with us, maybe we'll read your communication as part of our mailbag section. Find out how on there. Links everywhere, right? All on our show notes. Check it out. It's been a pleasure and an honor, of course, to have this time with you. And I am thankful that you are taking the time out of your busy schedules to listen to me here at Wargaming Recon. You know the deal. I am Jonathan J. Reinhart here at Wargaming Recon. Thank you very much. And as always, you know it. You have to. You need to. You gotta keep on gaming. Crossroad Games in Standish, Maine is holding a 32-hour-long charity board game marathon on Saturday, April 5th, 2014, lasting into Sunday, April 6th, 2014. All money raised will benefit childsplaycharity.org. Each participant needs to raise at least $100 to participate. This is supposed to be collected from friends and coworkers. Childsplaycharity.org, quote, seeks to improve the lives of children in hospitals around the world through the kindness and generosity of the video game industry and the power of play. All of the money is going to childsplaycharity.org. Players will get t-shirts and swag for participating, as well as playing a ton of board games. Crossroad Games is putting together the demo list, and they are considering having a game design seminar at the marathon. If you can't participate, please spread the word about this important charity. Hospitals around the world benefit from funds raised through childsplaycharity.org. Email info@crossroadgames.com for further information. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
If you heard it and you do like it, good. If you don't like it, what I'm supposed to do.
Shops in the bar.